From the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves, get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. Before we get into tonight's conversation, I just want to say this. We live in a time where trust feels fragile, where people question institutions, they question the truth, they question whether the people delivering the news are doing it with integrity or agenda. And yet there are journalists whose work quietly speaks for itself. People who didn't chase fame, didn't chase clicks, and didn't chase outrage. They chased accuracy, humanity, and presence. Tonight's guest is one of those people. His career wasn't flashy by design. It was steady. It was consistent. It was rooted in showing up again and again for the story and for the people living inside it. So this is a conversation tonight about journalism, yes, but it's also about resilience, service, mentorship, and what it means to dedicate a life to getting things right, even when it's hard. And with that, there are journalists who cover history, and then there are journalists who are history. Hal Eisner spent nearly six decades in broadcast journalism, starting in radio in Texas and Louisiana before moving into television in the early days of CNN. He went on to spend more than 40 years as a fixture on LA television news at Fox 11 and KCOP. Over the years, Hal covered some of the most consequential stories of our time, including the LA riots, the O.J. Simpson and Michael Jackson trials, major earthquakes and wildfires, and interviewed dozens of celebrities both on red carpets and in their homes. Hal is also the founder of Camp News, a nationally recognized mentoring program now in its 25th year. His new memoir is called An Accidental Career, My 58-Year Adventure as a Broadcast News Reporter. Hal Eisner is joining me now via phone. Hal, it's so great to have you here. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, you know, I've been monitoring the weather out your way, and I'm hoping everybody is cozy. I'm hoping everybody is being very careful, staying off the roads, and if you're on the roads, be extra careful. I know that, you know, these conditions are the worst.
I mean, they are kind of treating it like the blizzard of 78. I don't know if you remember that or not, and I don't think it's quite that bad, but it's pretty bad. It's definitely pretty bad. Yesterday I thought, you know, I would shove a little area where my dog could do his business, and it's too much information. But what kept happening was I was thinking I would do it every 3-4 hours. It wasn't like that at all. It was just about every hour I had to keep shoveling it out. So it was coming down at about 3 inches an hour. So it was coming down. So I was a little scared this morning when I woke up. But all's well that ends well, hopefully. So anyway, but let's talk about you. The title of your book, An Accidental Career, which I love because most people don't end up anywhere near where they started. When you look back, what actually pulled you into journalism?
I was in high school. It was a long time ago on a planet far, far away.
Okay.
And I was in high school, and I played saxophone in the high school band. And a local radio station, KLIF in Dallas, had a contest, send in a postcard. Tell us why you want to report the high school football score on Friday nights. And I thought, wow, what a great way to meet girls. And so I entered the contest, and there I was the only one who entered the contest, or they actually pulled my name out of the box and I won. But that's why you and I are talking right now, because that changed the course of what I thought I was going to do when I got older. I thought I was going to be a lawyer.
Oh.
And thought I'd go to college, do pre-law, do law, and you know, that would be the course of a career that I was kind of really excited about. But when I got into this giving of the high school football scores on Friday night, that dominoed into a behind-the-scenes job at the radio station that the guy who collected my report was doing, because he left and he recommended me, and one thing led to another. Before you knew it, I was on the road to a broadcast career instead of a legal career.
And do you ever look back and think, oh, I wish I had become a lawyer?
I think it would have been interesting. I've covered legal cases and things like that, and I've watched lawyers do their work, and you know, they're as professional as you can be, the ones I've watched, and yet I've thought I ended up in a good place.
Oh, good. I'm glad. So, and by the way, did you meet someone special when you were with your job? And Since you said you were going to meet girls, you said.
I would say since that was a million years ago, I've met a lot of somebody special.
Okay. All right. Never mind. We'll get past your love life, and we'll talk about when you were a kid.
Well, that could be the source of another book.
Okay. All right then. You were a kid living in Dallas when President Kennedy was assassinated, and I remember that day like it was yesterday. I remember the TV was on, and my mother was just crying. But what do you remember about that day? And what?
I'm not sure how you remember that because I've been your age several times.
No, seriously. So tell me, what do you remember about that day?
Remember a lot. I mean, we had just moved to Dallas. My dad got transferred within his company, got promoted. We had lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And here we moved to Dallas, Texas. And just a couple of months later, the assassination. I was in science class at the junior high school, Benjamin Franklin Junior High School. And the principal came on the speaker, Lloyd Bell. And he said, there's been a shooting. The president was shot in the motorcade he was in. And he's been running to Parkland Hospital, and it was a moment of absolute, I don't know what the word is, it was shock. Mm-hmm. And as I looked up in front of the classroom, Mr. Hoffrichter, the science teacher, who looked like he perhaps was a Marine at some point, a nice, strong, you know, presence out there in the front of the classroom, had his hand buried in his hand, and you could tell that he immediately went into a sense of sadness, depression. His mood dropped considerably. We were told we could go into the auditorium. They had a television set up where we could watch what was going on and the news reports. And as I was walking to the auditorium, there was a girl who had just come back from the motorcade route, and she was crying as she was going down the hallway. And then the word came that he had died. And there were four dark days in Dallas. That was, in fact, the name of a little publication, a magazine that the Dallas Morning News put out, Four Dark Days. And it was, you know, and it was... I don't know.
How old were you?
You
were in junior.
I was 13. I was 13 years old.
Okay, so you were old enough. You were old enough to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the synagogue that I went to as a kid was the same synagogue that Jack Ruby, his family name was Rubenstein, went to, and also where Abraham Zapruder, who shot the film of Kennedy being mortally wounded, also went. And it was, you know, a little close to home.
Your first 15 years in radio across Texas and Louisiana, what did radio teach you about storytelling that stayed with you once you moved into television?
Well, I think, you know, once I got to television, I really understood the difference in writing. And for radio, you write to the imagination. So let's say you're covering a fire and the flames are coming out from under a stairwell. You might say the flames were licking out from under the stairwell because you want to draw an image in the listener's mind. But with television, you see that. And so if a picture says 1,000 words, it's kind of up to you to come up with another 1,000 words to help enhance that picture, forward the story, and tell the viewers what it is that is occurring in that image.
Interesting. I've never thought of it flame licking the walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Was there a moment early on when you realized this isn't just a job, this is what I was actually meant to do?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I was pretty young those 15 years, and I guess so. I mean, I was very, very comfortable in radio. It was my first love.
Well, you certainly have a voice for radio, I can tell you that.
I have a face for radio, is what I used to say. But I really enjoyed it. It was great. Back then, I sat at the control board. There were only a couple of stations where I had a producer and a board operator. And, you know, I really was kind of getting into it. And, you know, it was more than I probably thought radio might provide me. One of the stations I worked at was an all-news station in Fort Worth. And that news director ended up going to CNN, which was very young in the early 80s. And he thought that I had what it took to tell TV stories, but I'd never had television experience. And I ultimately came out to LA at his invitation, and I decided to take the job. And here I was in a city that was so big, I couldn't imagine where my exits were on freeways, or, you know, where the station was or anything. And, you know, it was intimidating. It was a big place and a new business. And, you know, television was so much different than radio, but, you know, I got there. It was, you know, it was a fascinating time to be at CNN because it was the first all-news 24-hour station network trying to, you know, do something different and new.
And it was still an experiment, right?
It was in many ways. I mean, it was a work in progress.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ted Turner had this brilliant vision. And you know, look, today you have multiple such operations. And I think that this is all good for the public. I mean, you know, you can't underestimate the value of information.
Can you describe what that environment was actually like? I mean, did it feel historic at the time?
Well, everything felt historic to me. It was all new to me. And I was, you know, telling stories in a city that was 10 times the size of Dallas, Texas. And, you know, it was just, you know, a remarkable time. It was chaotic. I mean, anytime you start a new job, whether you understand it or not, it's going to be chaotic. And when you get into something where you have a whole bunch of new things to learn, it becomes even more chaotic. But, you know, I ended up going to local television in Los Angeles. And I really loved that because after a while, I would see the viewers that were watching our station in the grocery store. I would see my viewers at gas stations. I would be at a local convenience store getting something and somebody come up and say, "Hey, Hal, hi," you know? And I realized that the local broadcasting venue was really the thing that I just really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the rest of the way for decades, it was local TV. And I, you know, I'm very, very happy that happened.
But when I think of LA, I think of it as a city that's big and complex. I don't think of it as...
It is.
Right? So how do
it is.
Okay, so how do you build trust with viewers in a city like that?
Well, first of all, I had to figure out the city. And the way I dealt with that was I made little bite-sized nuggets. So I only really thought of L.A. as where I live, where I work, where I go shopping, and where maybe I go have my meals. And that was L.A. The rest of it I could discard. So as far as a personal approach to getting used to a city, it took me about a year, but I really fell in love with L.A. Now, as far as the viewers trusting a reporter, it doesn't matter if you're in a city the size of 10,000 people, a town, or 10 million people, you're still on in front of a camera talking into a glass lens and communicating to whoever happens to be watching. And if you follow the proper tenets of journalism, getting two sources to, you know, support whatever fact you're going to put out there and being credible and being honest and being transparent about the stories you're telling and making them interesting and making them something people can relate to, then it really, the size of a city doesn't matter. It's what you're doing in front of that camera that does.
Speaking of being in front of that camera, no matter how long you were in front of that camera, did you, each time you got in front of that camera, have a little stage fright?
I don't think I did particularly. No. I mean, if I got uncomfortable, it wasn't about the camera. It was about maybe the crowds or people that were around. If you were in a protest.
Yeah.
You know, you had a lot of people around you. You didn't know what you were going to be dealing with. If you were maybe, you know, on a breaking news story and you were in a neighborhood where something awful had happened, you know, you didn't exactly know who might be around you and how their mood might be. Right. So the camera itself is an inanimate object. It's metal and glass.
Yep.
And just like you look into your phone and you do a FaceTime with somebody, it's not too dissimilar from that.
Right.
I mean, it's really more about, you know, talking to the people in the audience on the other side of that, you know, camera. And so if you're really connecting, then what you're trying to do is you're trying to reach through the lens, grab somebody on the other side who's sitting on the sofa like Francesca, grabbing them by the collar and saying, "Listen, I've got something I want to tell you, and it's really important."
Well, this is great coaching for me. Thank you, Hal.
Well, if I've done that, then I've done my job.
We're going to take a short break and hear from our wonderful sponsors who make this show possible, and we will be right back. Listeners, don't go anywhere.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics. 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
Cold shower surprise? Relax. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating has it handled. From outdoor showers and high-efficiency water heaters to boiler replacements and full kitchen and bath remodels, they bring serious skill, sharp detail, and pride in every pipe. Got a plumbing or heating problem that stumped everyone else? That's their sweet spot. Water filtration too? Yep, covered. Every estimate comes with honest pricing, clear communication, and work done the right way. No funny business. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating. Craftsmanship you can feel. Reliability you can trust. Visit StefanoNagroPlumbing.com. From first drip to final fix, done right.
For all the special moments in life, for every milestone or event you want to capture forever, there's Cassandra's Photography. For 26 years, Sandy Sullivan has been making sure families have beautiful, artistic photos to remind them of the best times in their life, like souvenirs. Photos that never go out of style. Photos that will bring you back to a special moment in time when you and those you love and who love you view them. Sandy will help your personality shine through, putting you completely at ease. Whether it be for a senior portrait, headshot, family photo, or anything else you can capture in a lens. If it's an important photo, you want a professional behind the lens. And Sandy is nothing if not the consummate pro. Check out her work on Instagram by searching Cassandra's Photography or book an appointment today online at cassandrasphotography.com.
Worn carpet fibers, ground in dirt, heavy use. When dirt settles deep into your carpets and upholstery, or when your home or business needs a complete clean, it takes experience, precision, and the right tools to get it right. When you need a cleaning detective, that's Sherlock Holmes Cleaning. At Sherlock Holmes Cleaning, they specialize in carpet and upholstery cleaning, removing embedded dirt, stains, and odors with meticulous care. And they don't stop there. They also provide full residential and commercial cleaning services, from spotless homes to professional offices and more, all tailored to your schedule and your needs. Their professional team delivers reliable, high-quality results every time, leaving your space fresh, healthy, and welcoming. So don't wait. Visit SherlockHolmesCleaning.com or call them today at 774-772-5630 and experience a spotless home or office you can be proud of. Schedule now and let the experts find the problem and clean it right. For 25 years, Andorra Salon has been making the South Shore feel beautiful. And today, it's also your destination for stylish women's fashion. I know because I wouldn't go anywhere else. Andorra is where I always feel my most beautiful. Discover a curated boutique filled with flattering, easy-to-wear pieces you'll love reaching for again and again. From casual chic to something a little more special, Andorra makes getting dressed feel effortless and fun. And when you're ready to complete the look, their experienced team offers expert hair and makeup services, personalized just for you, all in one relaxing, welcoming space. Located at 82 Main Street in Kingston, Andorra delivers an elevated fashion and beauty experience designed to help you feel comfortable, confident, and completely yourself. Visit AndorraSalon.com today. That's A-A-N-D-O-R-A Salon, and be on your way to a new you. Shop the boutique, refresh your style, love the way you look. You'll be glad you did.
All right, we are back, and I am speaking to Hal Eisner. He has a new memoir. It's called An Accidental Career, My 58-Year Adventure as a Broadcast News Reporter. Welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you covered the LA riots in 1992, obviously a moment that reshaped the city. What do you still carry with you from that experience? If anything.
A lot of memories. I mean, you know, we see all kinds of protests going on even today. And, you know, when these things happen, there is tension in a community. What causes that tension may be racial tensions or maybe other issues. But whatever it happens to be, it is chaos. It is tense. And so in this particular case, you know, this had come out of the Rodney King case. And Rodney King was the person who was, you know, beaten by police officers who ended up going to trial and who were acquitted of the crime, and that set the city off. And I remember driving to an area with my photographer, and as we're going down a main street, there was a burning sofa in the middle of the street. And it's things like that, and you sort of dodge around these things, and then you get to where you need to be, and then you start dodging whatever else you have. Like, I remember there was a Las Vegas reporter that was in Los Angeles to cover the story, and he happened to be near my news van, and he was all shaken because a bullet whizzed by him. He heard that whiz, and he was very traumatized, and I put him in our news van, and I tried to calm him down, and I tried to talk to him, and, you know, let him know that everything was okay, and he was safe. And, you know, just you're forced into a position of situational awareness, and even if you are, you never know exactly what's coming your way. And that would be the case in another part of my life, which was being hit by a drunk driver, which we can talk about later if you like. But I think that it's all about knowing what's around you. But when you're covering a story, your focus, your brain, your attention is on the target of what you need to get in the way of information, and all this other stuff is out there too, and you have to kind of be aware of that as well.
Right. There's a lot of moving parts, and
exactly.
No, I hear you. Yeah, I remember when I've been in radio now for 17 years, but I remember when I first got into radio, it just seemed like there were all these things that I needed to focus on all at once, and it kind of felt almost daunting. And then, you know, you just get used to it. It's like, okay, I'm watching the clock, I'm thinking about the listener, I'm thinking about my guest, you know, and it just all comes together.
Let me put it in perspective. I mean, think about police officers, think about firefighters, how they have to get to the scene, they have to assess what's going on, they have to get right to work. We, as news reporters, are also first responders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to be able to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about that you got hit by a drunk driver, because you just piqued my curiosity, so let's hear about that. What happened?
Well, we were coming out of the pandemic, and the photographer I was with that day, Joab Perez, and I, we were interviewing the head of one of the tour bus companies that takes people around and shows them, you know, Hollywood, California, and where the stars live and all that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, an SUV hits my cameraman, hits me, hits several tourists, because it had jumped the curb at 40 miles an hour, and the man behind the wheel was, according to authorities, exhibiting twice the legal limit. And I was face down. I apparently flew through the air, a little like Superman without a cape. All these people were gathered around saying, don't move, you might have broken bones. People were amazing. I mean, their cameras were out and everything, which I was not surprised at, getting video of what was going on and me on the ground. But it was more about the compassion. I don't know if these people were homeless, if these people were tourists. I don't know what they were or who they were, but they were incredibly compassionate, worried about my health. And of course, the others that were on the ground as well, including my cameraman. I had 6 fractured ribs. I had a fractured tibia plateau in my knee. My cameraman had fractured ribs and his collarbone became disconnected, had to be screwed back in. And the tourists, I think one of them may still be in a wheelchair, I'm not sure. This happened back in 2021. But there were 2 sisters who came down from Washington State for a sister's weekend in Hollywood, and they ended up underneath the SUV.
Oh, did anybody die?
No, but police said somebody could have. We were very lucky.
Yeah.
It was a kind of accident that could have killed us. And yet we, by the grace of God or whatever, got through that thing. But I think it was more than that. I think it was really the viewers. The social media blew up like crazy. The people who were out there in the city were worried about us. They wrote to us on all the social media platforms, on email. I had text messages. Everything I had was blowing up because everybody was worried. People were calling the station. People were emailing. It was just a remarkable thing. And even to this day, people will come up to me and say, are you okay?
So what's the silver lining in happened. This?
Yeah, there was a silver lining. It was the people out there, and it was the compassion. And they made me, but they made me feel like I could have retired at that point. I was young enough to retire. And
young enough, that's funny, not old enough.
when you get to this age, you start changing words around. And you know, I was young enough to retire, and I wasn't going to let somebody who at 3 o'clock in the afternoon had too much to drink, got behind the wheel, put me face down on the concrete, end my career. I was going to come back. I was going to get in front of the camera. I was going to show everybody I was okay. And I kept working for a few more years.
Good for you. How long did it take you to recuperate?
It was a couple of months. I mean, you know, just in the hospital.
That's actually not bad based on
the results. No, it was, but it was not that. It was in the hospital. It was then in the California Rehab Institute. Then it was home health care. And then finally starting to come back to work.
And what happened to the drunk driver?
He's behind bars.
Oh, uh-huh. Still, how long? Well, actually, it wasn't that long ago, was it? You said 2021?
Yeah, 2021.
So that was only 5 years
ago. I believe there was a deal with the DA. He got 8 years.
Unbelievable. I want to move on to the O.J. Simpson and the Michael Jackson trials, because they obviously weren't just news stories, but really, you know, they were like cultural moments.
Yeah.
Right?
How'd
you stay grounded as a journalist when the entire world is watching?
Well, I mean, you know, and Whitney Houston, too. You know, Whitney Houston, too, was another one that the eyes were all on Beverly Hills where she had died. But, you know, I think that we as journalists are in the front row of history. We write the first page, actually, of history. This book of mine, this An Accidental Career, is actually also a history book in many ways.
Oh, I bet it is, yeah.
Well, of course, because we're talking about the stories like what you just asked about, O.J. Simpson and Michael Jackson. Simpson, I covered the murders, not the trial. And it was an unbelievable scene. I mean, there were so many, you would have thought an entire journalism school unloaded right into the neighborhood. There were so many journalists that were out there, newspaper, magazine, television, radio, all covering this horrible crime. And it was something like I'd never seen before. I've covered a lot of crimes, but this was massive. And then when we talk about Michael Jackson, I covered a number of Michael Jackson stories. One of them, I actually did cover a trial in Santa Maria, California, where there was accusations of child crimes, and he was acquitted. But his family sat in the row in front of me, LaToya and Janet, mom and dad. And he sat at the defense table in front of them, and he walked in every day and walked out every day. And I think one of the sort of interesting things about it was I liked Michael Jackson music. You know, it's just something about that music. He was a king of pop, right?
Oh, yeah,
And so I was staying at the DoubleTree in Santa Maria because I was out of town, and I would go to court each day and go home on the weekends back here in LA, and I would listen to Michael Jackson music going to court and coming back. I don't know why I wanted to do that. Maybe because I just wanted to. Well, it's it's sort of like this is the guy whose story I'm doing, and this is the music that he sings. But it was interesting. He obviously was under a gag order. He wasn't able to talk, even though we'd ask him every day, is there something he'd like to say about today's testimony. His attorneys, of course, did all the talking, and that was very interesting. I covered his death. That was it was like the day Elvis died, the day John Kennedy Jr. died. It was Princess Diana. It was that kind of a thing.
Wow.
And I covered the trial of Dr. Conrad Murray, who was accused of killing him with propofol.
Right.
And
right.
That was another case. So, you know, again, front row to history, right? And I mean, these are things that are world stories, not just local stories. And, you know, you realize and recognize the magnitude of something that's big, that it's huge, and you know it, but you still focus on it like it's a single local story.
At the end of the day, after you've done a story, are you able to just kind of put that to the side and then go on with your personal life, or does it all get kind of intertwined?
No, you find techniques. What do police officers do to be able to come off of a day long?
I don't know. Some of them drink.
Of
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
There was probably a happy hour or two myself, but not because of that. It's because I like to be with my friends. But I think it's more that you find a way to compartmentalize. For me, I know this sounds a little off the wall, but when I was a kid, and I think back then the president was a fellow named Fred Flintstone. And when I was a kid, Fred Flintstone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
You didn't hear me chuckle, okay.
Yeah, you little zinger here and there. You know, there was a commercial for Colgate toothpaste. And it was Colgate had a Gardol shield. And Gardol was a good, I guess, marketing technique to say that the toothpaste had what it needed to be able to protect your teeth. Well, I sort of took on the Gardol shield. And whenever I got into a scene that I thought was dicey, I would think about being protected by this Gardal shield, that I was there as a trained observer. Mm-hmm. I was there as a first responder. I was there to tell everybody who's at work what happened while they were at work. And I would try to distance myself mentally. So at the end of the day, you know, I was able to put that to the side and move on and go back to the office, as it were, the next day.
That's something that I've always struggled with, this compartmentalizing. And I've gotten a lot better at it over the years, but it's a practice. And I think men, dare I say, but I think men are able to do that slightly better than women. What do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I've never really had this kind of a conversation with a woman other than you right now. And I'm not sure that I have been able to assess the difference in gender as far as who can do what to what. I know there are plenty of news reporters out there that are female. I've been very involved with my union, SAG-AFTRA, for many years. I'm on the national board. So I know most of the reporters here in LA and across the country. And I think the women that I've come in contact with are able to get through the day just fine and move on to the next day. And I suspect that, like me, they must compartmentalize.
Right.
But, you know, it's a conversation I guess I'll have one of these days and say, I was talking to this lady, Francesca, on the radio. She brought this thing up and I wondered what you thought.
Oh, and when you find out, let me know. We're going to take another short break and hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, I know that you've interviewed countless celebrities over the years. And I would love to know, what do people tend to misunderstand about the celebrity interviews? So marinate on that and we will be right back. Listeners, don't go anywhere.
For 25 years, Andora Salon has been making the South Shore feel beautiful. And today, it's also your destination for stylish women's fashion. I know, because I wouldn't go anywhere else. Andora is where I always feel my most beautiful. Discover a curated boutique filled with flattering, easy-to-wear pieces you'll love reaching for again and again. From casual chic to something a little more special, Andora makes getting dressed feel effortless and fun. And when you're ready to complete the look, their experienced team offers expert hair and makeup services personalized just for you, all in one relaxing, welcoming space. Located at 82 Main Street in Kingston, Andora delivers an elevated fashion and beauty experience designed to help you feel comfortable, confident, and completely yourself. Visit AndoraSalon.com today. That's AANDORA Salon, and be on your way to a new you. Shop the boutique, refresh your style, love the way you look. You'll be glad you did. Worn carpet fibers, ground in dirt, heavy use. When dirt settles deep into your carpets and upholstery, or when your home or business needs a complete clean, it takes experience, precision, and the right tools to get it right. When you need a cleaning detective, that's Sherlock Holmes Cleaning. At Sherlock Holmes Cleaning, they specialize in carpet and upholstery cleaning, removing embedded dirt, stains, and odors with meticulous care. And they don't stop there. They also provide full residential and commercial cleaning services, from spotless homes to professional offices and more, all tailored to your schedule and your needs. Their professional team delivers reliable, high-quality results every time, leaving your space fresh, healthy, and welcoming. So don't wait. Visit SherlockHolmesCleaning.com or call them today at 774-772-5630 and experience a spotless home or office you can be proud of. Schedule now and let the experts find the problem and clean it right. Cold shower surprise? Relax. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating has it handled. From outdoor showers and high-efficiency water heaters to boiler replacements and full kitchen and bath remodels, they bring serious skill, sharp detail, and pride in every pipe. Got a plumbing or heating problem that stumped everyone else? That's their sweet spot. Water filtration too? Yep, covered. Every estimate comes with honest pricing, clear communication, and work done the right way. No funny business. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating. Craftsmanship you can feel. Reliability you can trust. Visit StefanoNagroPlumbing.com. From first drip to final fix, done right.
For all the special moments in life, for every milestone or event you want to capture forever, there's Cassandra's Photography. For 26 years, Sandy Sullivan has been making sure families have beautiful, artistic photos to remind them of the best times in their life, like souvenirs. Photos that never go out of style. Photos that will bring you back to a special moment in time when you and those you love and who love you view them. Sandy will help your personality shine through, putting you completely at ease. Whether it be for a senior portrait, headshot, family photo, or anything else you can capture in a lens. If it's an important photo, you want a professional behind the lens. And Sandy is nothing if not the consummate pro. Check out her work on Instagram by searching Cassandra's Photography or book an appointment today online at cassandrasphotography.com.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
All right, we are back, and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. I am speaking with Hal Eisner. We are discussing his career, and he has a new memoir, An Accidental Career, My 58-Year Adventure as a Broadcast News Reporter. Welcome back, Hal.
Thank you.
So you've interviewed so many celebrities, right? So what do people tend to misunderstand about these celebrity interviews, if anything?
They're human beings, just like you and me.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are absolutely just like you and me. They brush their teeth, they get dressed, they go out to their job, they go home and have dinner with their families. They're just like you and me. And it happens to be that they, like you and me, are on a platform that has an audience. And so, you know, that's what makes them a quote-unquote celebrity. But as public figures, they also have private lives. And so, you know, I think that I've seen many celebrities over the years. I've gotten to know many celebrities over the years. I'm on the board with many celebrities at SAG-AFTRA. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they're just like us. And you
a lot
know,
of smoke
I remember,
and mirrors, don't you think?
Well, smoke and mirrors are I don't know. What is the definition of smoke and mirrors?
I don't know.
Do we put on our best smile whenever we go out in public? When you go out and have a nice dinner with somebody, don't you put on your best smile?
I guess so, yeah.
And so when a celebrity comes out to a red carpet, and the whole purpose of the red carpet is to help promote the movie that they may be going to the premiere for. Don't they want to put on their best smile? Don't they want to come off in the role that they are, which is an actor or an actress? And I think that, you know, smoke and mirrors, I'm not sure. I think, you know, if smoke and mirrors means they're doing something unusual, I'm not sure what that would be. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very common to smile, to be gracious. Look, there was one year, the Golden Globes, mm-hmm. and I was out in front of the Beverly Hilton on the red carpet, and you stand there and the celebrities come to you one by one by one by one. And to my right, the interviewer was interviewing George Clooney. And I don't know if maybe I looked a little anxious or, you know, was eager to talk to him, but in the course of the interview with the guy to the right of me, in a pause, he tapped me on the arm and said, "Don't worry, you're next." And I thought, what a guy. I mean, obviously, he's just going down the buffet line of reporters.
Right.
And nice of him to acknowledge. Maybe I was, you know, a little anxious wanting to talk to him, and he wanted to make sure I knew that I was going to be his next interview. I carried that along. Well, I was in New York, and I saw Good Night and Good Luck when he was playing on Broadway, and he came out and at the stage door, like most of the performers do on Broadway, and he came out, and he went down the lines of people, and he was gracious, and he said hello to everybody he could, and he took some selfies with people, you know. And that, you know, that was just fans. Mm-hmm. That was just people who had been in there watching him do this play about Edward R. Murrow. And so I think, you know, sometimes we always get dressed up with our best smile whenever we're in a public venue or we are with people that we want to have you know, a nice entertaining time with.
I've always been a little curious why we get really anxious when, you know, we see, I forget where I was. I was with my husband at the time, and there was, it was an actor, and I don't know why I can't think of his name, but anyway. I remember my husband being so anxious about him, and by me said, I love your movies, you know, and I just wonder why people are always so anxious and fearful and excited when they see someone who, yes, of course, they have an absolutely fabulous career, but I mean, look at how some of them, you know, end up living their lives. And for the ones that do stay alive, I mean, so many of them, they die, they take their lives, they overdose. Lives are not all so great.
Isn't that, though, a reflection of the community? Don't we have the same sort of things happening in the general population?
Yeah, but exactly. So why is it that people are just so in awe of these actors and actresses? And I remember being an extra in Ted, this is a zillion years ago, and I remember Mila Kunis, they were all fawning over her, and I wasn't really awestricken like so many of the people were, and I don't know why they were, and I don't know why I wasn't, but I always found that very curious, like, what do you think that is about?
Well, I suspect, though, that, you know, there are people who know the name Francesca Luca, and they happen to be in an area where you are, and they, hey, that's Francesca. She's on the radio. And, you know, same thing, but same thing on a local level. I think that we see people in the movies, we see people on stage, we see people on television, we hear them on the radio, and that stands out because they're on a platform. And I think that, you know, it's very important to be able to recognize people who take a moment to come up to you and say hello, that you're just like everybody else.
Absolutely.
I will always take 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. If somebody comes up to me and says, how you doing? Like they did the other day at one of the stores here, and they said, how's retirement? And I said, hey, it's like a long vacation. What's your name? And I'll get into a conversation. I do this every time.
Beautiful.
Because they
took
a minute to say hello to me, and
absolutely,
I'm going to take a minute and stop what I'm doing and say hello to them. And, you know, something I learned from Alex Trebek, who was, of course, the great host of Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
We did a couple of specials together on a local station here. And in one of the specials, we're in Las Vegas, and we were doing kind of a behind the scenes at one of the Cirque du Soleil shows. And he wanted to go see a bunch of cars at the Imperial Palace Hotel. He was into the cars, like, you know, the car that Franklin Roosevelt was in, the car that, you know, Lyndon Johnson was in, whatever. And so we got up in the morning and we walked down the strip and we went toward the Imperial Palace. And as we were going there, everybody was looking at him like with laser beams. He's like the most recognizable guy on the planet. And then when we left there, we came back. We went to another casino, and I had told him I kind of liked video keno, and he wanted me to teach him how to play that. Can you imagine? I thought he knew everything, and he wanted me to teach him video keno. And so, you know, we sat down, and then I walked over to the change ladies to get some coins, and they said, is that Alex Trebek? I mean, everybody. So I asked him, I said, you know, you're getting such a response. I'm just sort of blown away by how everybody's just sort of like stopping and laser beaming you. He said, well, that means that I'm getting through. That means I'm getting through the screen to the viewers. And that's something that's important and positive.
Absolutely.
And I sort of felt the same way.
Yeah.
But I really adopted that wholeheartedly after we had that conversation, because that is the truth. When you are on a screen, a little one or a big one, or on a stage, and people are recognizing you, that means you've done your job. It's kind of
exactly.
like you go to the dentist and they fix your tooth and they've done their job. So these are jobs. These are things we do for a living, and we end up sometimes having an entire career.
Hal, I'd love to just switch gears here a little bit and talk about your Camp News, the mentoring program that you launched over 25 years ago. Why don't you tell our listeners about it?
Well, back in the year 2000, there were local stations that didn't want to have the interns go out in the news vans anymore because of liability issues and insurance-related issues. And so I was at the time president of the Associated Press Television Radio Association. And I thought, well, what an opportunity here for us. We can create an environment of a news story and have people come and experience that as a mentoring program in IMAX. And so we brought out actors and actresses, special effects makeup artists. We brought out police and fire and public information officers from the sheriff's department and DEA who would hold mock news conferences. And this is the only time you'll hear me use these words, but we would create fake news. And those stories that were not real were played out on the campus of a camp that we would rent. And the camp had dormitory space and catering. And for a weekend, we would have this going on. And then down the canyon from there, Pepperdine University had a television studio. And so we created an anchor camp in the studio for those who wanted that. We created the reporting camp in the canyon for those who wanted that. We added radio to that. And we did both of them in English and Spanish.
Oh, I'm smiling from ear to ear.
And that has continued all these years, even until this past December when we had our latest one. And even in this past December, I saw so many young people, mostly college students, mm-hmm. who are getting out and wanting to go to work with fire in their belly, with ethics in their brain, and with smarts and ready to go to work. And I think my feeling was we're in good hands.
That's fantastic. Why was it important for you to give back to the next generation of journalists? And I mean, I think I know the answer to that question. Just because I have interns and I love their, as you put it, the fire in their belly, their integrity, their, I love it all. But I just would love to hear from you and have you.
Well, I think that we all have a responsibility regardless mm-hmm. of what career we happen to be in, to help people. There were people who opened doors for me. If they hadn't opened doors for me, then I wouldn't have been able to walk through those doors and continue to improve on my career. And so I felt like it was my responsibility mm-hmm. to also right. mentor and do those sort of things, sort of the social sleeve that I have. And I felt like, you know, I could do mentoring one-on-one or I could do it 1 on 100, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I felt like it was much better to create a much larger environment that more people could benefit from. And so I not only was creating opportunity for mentoring, I was also creating a whole bunch of mini-me's.
Oh, yeah. It just feels so good, doesn't it?
It feels great.
It does. It really, there's just, there really
you know,
is.
20 years.
There's
20
nothing
years
like
later,
giving.
I've got
Yeah,
but 20 years later, I've got people coming up to me saying, I don't know if you remember, I went to your camp. Oh, really? Yeah, I'm anchoring at such and such a station.
Oh, don't you love it? Don't you love it?
Yeah.
When you look at young journalists today, what do you think they need the most to succeed? They need to
Well, I think that, you know, there's so many tools that we have to have, but one of them is to be compassionate. One of them is to be thoughtful. One of them to be as caring. One of them is to be sensitive. One of them is to be very professional and to write well and to understand and very quickly be able to understand the basic stories that you're dealing with and to understand that you have to find somebody to help put a face on that story as a microcosm so that story is something that can resonate with people who are watching or listening.
Yeah.
And I feel like the kids that I'm seeing coming out of college, they've got all that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, are they different from now? Yeah. They have social media. Are they different from when I was going to school? Yeah. They've got FaceTime. They have Zoom. They have all kinds of new tools that we didn't have back. But I think they're up to the task.
Yeah, you know, the social media and all the technology and whatnot. I mean, it's wonderful. I don't know how we ever got by before. But I also think that it takes away the human element oftentimes.
Well, we got along before because we knew how to write letters.
Yes.
We knew how to make phone calls. We knew how to communicate in more primitive ways. But in many ways, social media has added. And yes, it's detracted in some ways. But there are good aspects to it, just like there are not so good.
Oh, of course. Journalism has taken a lot of criticism, obviously, in recent years, especially in the Trump era, dare I bring this up. But why do you believe the media is getting such a bad rap?
Well, I think because we can be targets. Look, we have a responsibility. We have a First Amendment responsibility to the truth, and that's our job. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, people who are citizen journalists. I'm not talking about people who are tabloid reporters. I'm talking about mainstream media, and we are trained like any other profession. And as long as we remember the ethics of what we're supposed to do, we will be ethical. And I think that, you know, politicians in many cases, look, politicians have always had a beef with reporters because reporters can, you know, tell stories about them that may be that are most likely true.
Yep.
Because they source their information. But, you know, we go back to every president there is, and there's been a press versus president sort of dynamic. And that's why they have the big press dinner every year to sort of let out the steam. And I think that, you know, I think that it's just been magnified under the current administration by putting words like fake news and things like that out there and branding it. When in fact, I don't know anybody that does fake news. Do you?
No.
I mean, do you know anybody
No.
who actually has made up a story about somebody and put it on your radio station?
No, I do not.
I don't believe. I have a chapter in this book called There Is No Fake News, because I believe there really is no fake news. There are people who don't like the news they hear. They don't like the news that's being told about them. But I don't believe it's fake.
When you look back on this quote-unquote accidental career, what makes you feel the most grateful?
That I'm sitting here talking to you.
Aw.
No, I'm so grateful that I've been able. I think we're all like a book with legs, just waiting to be written. And I feel like, you know, I am so grateful that I've had a good career. I'd do it all over again the same way if I could. I'm so grateful that, you know, I'm having this opportunity to talk to people like you. You're way up in the Northeast. I'm way out here in the Southwest. Right? I mean,
we've got tons of snow. You've got 80 degree weather. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, but the thing is that I'm grateful that we can have this conversation, that you and I can talk, that I can share my thoughts with your listeners. And I'm not in your community, but I'm in your community thanks to technology.
Well, absolutely.
And so I feel like I'm grateful that I've had a great career. I'm grateful I have met the people I've met. I'm grateful that I've had a front row seat to history. I'm grateful for so many things, and not to mention my kids and a lot of other stuff. There's just so much to be happy about, so much to be grateful for, you know. And after that crash where I got hit and busted up and in the hospital, I'm grateful I'm alive every day.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay, so you were 6 decades in broadcasting. What still gives you hope?
Because I see these kids at camp that are coming out and they have exactly the kinds of things I think they should have to be journalists. I believe that there will always be purveyors of information. I believe that as long as we're not a state-run media, I believe that as long as we have a First Amendment, we will always have purveyors of information, whether that's on radio, television, a hologram. What I like to call a hologram, or, you know, any other number of devices that we don't even know may come into existence in the future. But the information will always be the same. Mm-hmm. It's got to be corroborated by 2 sources. It has to be honest. It has to be accurate. And if there's a mistake, because everybody's human, a mistake is possible, it needs to be corrected right away.
Is there anything that you want, before we close this interview, that you want to share with our listening audience that I haven't asked you?
You know, I think that we can all learn from the news stories that we put out on the air. There's a nugget of something in every one of them. And I go back to the Rodney King case. And I go back to the words of Rodney King, can we all get along? And I think that if we pay attention to the history that's been provided through stories of the past decades, we can all get along, and we all can become, you know, better citizens of our country, and we all can be smarter, more aware, and put our best foot forward.
Well, Hal, it's been an absolute pleasure interviewing you. I feel really lucky to have had this opportunity. So I wish you much joy, health, happiness, and tons of relaxation in your retirement.
I can't thank you enough. Thank you. And stay warm, everybody.
Okay, you take care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
All right. My guest has been Hal Eisner. He's a legendary broadcast journalist and author of An Accidental Career, My 58-Year Adventure as a Broadcast News Reporter. It's a memoir about curiosity, resilience, mentorship, and a deep commitment to getting the story right. Hal, again, thank you for the decades of service, your generosity with the next generation, and for sharing your story with us today. All right, we've got to wrap things up and say goodnight. Hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. See you next week.